Welcome back to My Love Letter Time Machine. Hi, I'm Ingrid Birchall Hughes, and I'm serialising the love letters of my great-great-grandparents, Fred Shepherd and Janie Warburton. Travel 140 years back in time with me now, where we take a look at Victorian history through their eyes. And today, Janie goes to the seaside, and we take a look at the Married Women's Property Act of 1882. Descriptions of holidays at the seaside up until now have been Fred's preserve, so it's rather wonderful that I get to share Janie's fabulous account of a family day at the seaside at Cleethorpes. But first, a discussion about the merits of being a tall bride. I should point out, in case you hadn't picked it up yet, that our Janie was rather diminutive. In haste, Handsworth, August the 14th, 1882. My own darling husband, I have not time to give you much tonight. Mother has gone to Sheffield, and I am housekeeper and barmaid, and we have rather a noisy company in. I was disappointed this morning at not receiving my usual letter. Did you get back from Yarm all right, love? I am expecting Ted and Miss Dalton tonight. Ted called on Saturday night and said they were coming up. I only had time to say, how do you do, and just for him to tell me they were coming. We were so busy. I think they will say when this great event is coming off. I wonder where they will hold the wedding, as Sally, I think, has not many relatives in Sheffield. I should think it will be at some of Ted's friends. Miss Dalton will make a good fine bride. She is so tall. Don't you think they look better than little ones? I did wish you could be with me yesterday, my darling. I went to church in the morning. In the afternoon I was alone in the room, so I went to sleep and did not feel very much better for it because the room was rather cold. I could not sleep for 2 or 3 hours at night. Kate went out to tea yesterday, so I had to stop in and wait for her in the evening, which you know I do not enjoy very much. But she obliges me sometimes, so I must return the obligation. The choir have gone to Scarborough today. I have been trying to do some sewing this afternoon, but it has been almost a failure, having to wait all the time. I shall have to work hard to get most of it done. I shall leave some, because I shall have plenty of time to sew after we get straightened. You must please excuse more tonight. Anxiously awaiting your letter, I remain, till death us do part, your loving, true, and faithful wife, Janie. Handsworth, August the 15th, 1882. My own darling husband, I received your very nice, long and welcome letter this morning. I quite forgive you not writing for Monday. I was rather uneasy because of you telling me you were going to Yarm. I was so afraid you had had an accident, love, and could not live if I was to lose you, loving you more than my husband. I did mean that I love you more than ever, my husband. I was so pleased to hear you all right, darling, this morning. I felt so fidgety at not having one yesterday. Ted and Miss Dalton came up last night. I had scarcely any time to talk to them, with Mother being out. I was sorry because I wanted to have a nice long talk about both weddings. Mother came just as they were about to go, so I went down the street with them. They have put theirs off until November, as Ted has not had so much work lately. They told me they have bought a very nice drawing-room suite at a sale for £11, and it cost 40 when new, but it is not at all soiled now. They want us, if we come over at Christmas, to stop with them, but I expect, love, you will not have much holiday, so we shall not be able to stop many nights anywhere, but at your house and ours. Miss Dalton does look well. She and Ginny would have just made a well-matched couple to be bridesmaids, but I am afraid I should never be seen at all if they were. I shall have to answer your letter fully on Thursday, my darling. I have had a letter to write to Carrie for our John tonight, and it has taken up the time I should have devoted to yours. But he has had to go out on business and could not write before he went. Carrie wanted him to go to Harrogate tomorrow, but he has not got his business done, so can't go until Friday. He will only go for the day. Ted said he wrote to you yesterday, so I suppose he will have told you about their wedding. Emma has gone to Clay Cross Flower Show today. It has not been a very nice day. It is post time, love. I dare not stop to write more. I do love you, my darling, and remain, as always, your loving, true and faithful wife, Jeannie. Royal Exchange, Middlesbrough, the North Eastern Steel Company Limited, August the 16th, 1882. My own darling wife, I received your letters of yesterday and today, for which I thank you very much. It was a pity that you were so busy when Ted and Miss Dalton came up, my love, as I know you would have derived pleasure in comparing notes as to the weddings. You say, I think that tall brides look better than little ones. I really don't know, love, not having seen any, but I don't expect any bride will look better or nicer or happier than mine, at least if I can do anything towards her looks. I am sorry that you could not sleep Sunday night, love. It's not very pleasant to be restless, as I very well know. It was strange the room was cold, love, as here it was almost unbearably hot Sunday. I should certainly leave the sewing until after our wedding. Rather than weary yourself with working too much at it now, I should think you will have a little time to devote to it then, though I think I shall take a great deal of your time, especially at the first, as you will have considerable sewing to do for me, love, as well as other things. I thought Ted's wedding would not come off in September, from what Ted's mother told me. They will be great in the drawing-room suite, if in nothing else. It makes our dining-room suite look small, doesn't it, love? I don't think we shall trouble Ted more at Christmas, love. It is rather doubtful we can come to Sheffield at all then, unless you are very homesick, then of course we should have to come. You certainly would not be seen, love, if you had two such bridesmaids as Ginny and Miss Dalton. So small and insignificant, you know. Though I expect you will be great notwithstanding. I got Ted's letter this morning. He had posted it to Church Street. Everybody is having a holiday here, but no Stockton races, and to make up for it, we are working more every night. I shall stop the overtime when you come, love, as I shall want to get home to you. I love you more than ever, my darling wife, and remain your loving, true and faithful husband, Fred. P.S. Another variety of paper to your already good stock. In Janie's next letter, we get to hear about her family trip to Cleethorpes, which she described to a friend a few weeks ago as a bit of a dead-alive place, but her account doesn't seem to reflect that. She mentions a little confusion about which excursion various family members had bought tickets for, which meant that they couldn't travel together and had to rendezvous at the seaside. I found one of the advertisements for that August in the Sheffield Independent, and while it's not the most exciting thing I've ever found in the paper to do with my family, I get rather delighted in finding bits of Fred and Janie's world still in evidence. It's so relatable, isn't it, seeing an event in the newspaper and arranging a family get-together. The advert reads, Manchester, Sheffield and Lincolnshire Railway. Half day at the seaside, every Wednesday during August. Cheap express excursions to Grimsby and Cleethorpes will run from Rotherham Central, 10:30 a.m, Broad Lane, 10:40, Attercliffe, 10:45, Sheffield Victoria Station, 11:30, Darnall, 10:53, Woodhouse, 11, etc. Returning from Cleethorpes at 8 p.m. and Grimsby, 8:15. Tickets, bills and every information can be had in Sheffield of Messrs Drake and Dawson, 5 East Parade and 200 West Street. W.R. Underdown, General Manager, London Road Station, Manchester, August 1882. For Sheffield folk, Cleethorpes, then and now, is probably the nearest bit of sandy beach on the east coast of England that you can get to, sitting as it does at the mouth of the Humber Estuary. It's about 70 miles from Sheffield, as the crow flies, and takes about an hour and 40 minutes on the train. My mum, when she was a little lass living in Handsworth, was also kitted out with a bucket and spade, as well as a hand-knitted swimming costume, and along with Skegness and Scarborough, was often taken to Cleethorpes. Actually, there's a really cute bit of nomenclature concerning the place. It's thought that before Cleethorpes was a town, it was a small collection of villages, or thorps, called Italy, Ool and Thrunscoe. The larger parish was called Clee, an old word for clay, hence Cleethorpes. Like many of our seaside resorts, Cleethorpes started life as a fishing village and over the course of the 19th century acquired a reputation for sea bathing and the taking of medicinal waters. But what really kicked off the tourism trade was linking it to the industrial towns of Yorkshire via the aforementioned Manchester, Sheffield and Lincolnshire Railway and the construction of the pier, which was opened in 1873. I found a postcard of Cleethorpes online that was sent in the 1920s, but if you look closely, you can see that it's been printed with a rather gaudy coloured overlay on top of a black and white photo, as evidenced by every straw hat being a rather lurid yellow blob. Judging by the fashion, the picture is much earlier and was probably taken at the turn of the century. There are crowds of people enjoying walks along the beach, with the pier far off in the distance. There are donkeys with traps, taking people for a ride along the sands. In the foreground on the seafront, there are two carousels, a set of swing boats, and other fairground attractions. There are food tents and many, many market stalls dotted around. I'll hand over to Janie's description now, but I must just say how much I love the little glimpse she gives of her older brother William, happily playing in the sand with his kids, while the women go off and have a bit of fun. It's just a throwaway line, but I find it so, so touching. There's something about William I'm really drawn to. He and Polly have proved very protective over Janie. He offered significant support to his father and his older sister Emma during Emma's divorce and later in her struggle with drink. And here he is, letting his hair down with his children. I've got a photograph of him. He's got a kind face. I'll put it up on the My Love Letter Time Machine Instagram, along with a postcard of Cleethorpes. Handsworth, August the 17th, 1882. My own darling husband. I got back from Cleethorpes all right, and was pleased to find a letter for me this morning from you. We spent a very enjoyable afternoon there. We were rather unfortunate in this way. We did not know there was two excursions until we got to Darnell Station, and that the one we had to go by came from Rotherham and did not call at Sheffield, so our William, Polly and the children had to go by the other that started from Sheffield and did not call at Darnell. We did not see them until they got to Cleethorpes. Our train got in a few minutes first, so we waited for them. They went back a few minutes before us, so we had not the pleasure of their company either way, which was rather provoking. The first thing we did was what Sheffield people generally do, feed. We got a very comfortable private house down one of the streets off the main street, so left our cloaks there and ordered tea for 6 o'clock. We went down on the sand, and then left our William with the children digging sand, and went on the pier. I had a dance with Maria and Emma Gill, and we stayed on there for an hour. Before that, we went on a drive on the water in one of those little traps, and we did see some sights, one great fat old woman paddling, and lots of women with all kinds of legs, fat, thin, black, white, and all colours. They were quite disgusting. After that, we went to look round what few shops there are and the bazaars. I tried to get you one of those nickel matchboxes, but could not. But I hope you will like the one I did get for you. I could not find anything else, love, to buy you, as there is not much choice there. I bought a matchbox for our bedroom to hang under the gas. After tea, we walked on the cliffs. The tide was in beautifully. I did wish you were there, darling. Then I should have enjoyed myself. We left Cleethorpes at 8:15 and got to Darnell at 11:05. It was too late to go home, so had to stay all night at Darnell. I got home this morning a little after 11. The usual monthly came off yesterday morning, early. I was very sick. If I had not had promised to go, I should not have gone. I felt so poorly. I was bad all the way to Darnell and in the train, and then I began to feel better and I felt all right before I got there, for which I was thankful. I will now try to answer your letter of Tuesday, love. It was a nice long one. I was glad that the ring you and I bought could be altered to suit. I did not like the idea of having another one. It is much nicer to have the one we chose together. I sincerely hope that my fears about our Emma may not be realised on our wedding day, my darling. She will have to be very closely watched if she does not spoil it. She has had a little more today. She has been swearing at Mother and saying things that she would not stand from anybody else this afternoon. She speaks to her worse than any common woman I have ever heard in the street. I do agree with you about us never having her at our house, both for your sake and mine. I should not like them to know that she was my sister. She even told Mother the other morning that I said that I would not have either my mother or her over to see me. I certainly did say I would not have her over, but as for Mother, she knows that is a base fabrication. She is always trying to put some nasty thing into Mother's head. But never mind, darling. I shall not have long to stop at home. I have only 8 more weeks to bear it, and I shall try to bear it bravely. I shall value our home rightly, I hope, my darling. It will be a happy change. I shall not be able to send the box until next Tuesday. I can't send it by Mr. Stacy until Saturday, and being Woodhouse Flower Show on the Monday, Annie Wortley will want me to go, so I think he will call for it on Tuesday morning and take it to the Midland station, and I will send them off Tuesday afternoon and address them to Albert Terrace. I shall not object at all to a few weeks at Redcar next summer, if we can afford it, my darling. It would be very nice for you to come back to Middlesbrough in the morning and back to me at night, love, even if you cannot get clear holiday. I know we should enjoy it, and the change would do you good, love. We shall see by then, shan't we, love? Have Mr. and Mrs. Marston taken a furnished house down there? They were thinking of taking one of those cottages, were they not? It would be very nice to live up at Linthorpe, love, if we could manage it, but the distance must not be too far for you. It would be very nice after the works get started and we have the bairns to keep me company. We shall see about it then, love. I shall like my married name very well, love. It will be Mrs. Fred Shepherd. I will now answer this morning's letter, darling. I was only thinking what you would say about tall and little brides. I know you will think I am the nicest bride, and I certainly shall be a happy one, my husband. Our room is always cold, love, because of the sun never getting in. I shall be very happy to do all the sewing you want doing, my love. I shall have time to do it when we are settled down. I shall do the things for myself that are necessary, and the rest I shall leave. I don't think Ted's drawing room suite makes our drawing room suite look small. I am quite satisfied, love. It is a shame that you are not to have holiday like the rest. You must try to give up the overtime, love, when we are together. I love you, my darling, more than ever, and remain your loving, true, and faithful wife, Janie. Royal Exchange, Middlesbrough, the North Eastern Steel Company Limited, August the 18th, 1882. I received your very welcome letter this morning, love, for which I thank you. I am pleased you got back from Cleethorpes all right, and that you enjoyed yourself so much while there. It was unfortunate there being 2 trains, as it debarred you from the company of your William and his family. I wish I could have had a dance on the pier, love, with you. I think I should enjoy a dance again, and I don't suppose we shall get one yet. I would not have minded the variety of legs, love, if I could have only been with you. You must not forget, my darling, that not everyone has got such good legs as you. I should not like them to have, I think. I don't think I should have enjoyed looking at those legs as much as looking at yours, my wife, and, shall I say, a little higher. It does not want long now, my darling, to the time when I shall have the right of seeing anything besides legs. Is that so, wifey? I like the matchbox you have sent, love, very much. It is rather too light for ordinary use, so I am going to save it. I am pleased, love, that the usual monthly came off, but very sorry that you had so much pain. I don't think you can be all right, darling, or you would not have had so much pain. However, I suppose that settles the question of 7 months or 9 months after our marriage, does it not, love? I am not surprised at anything your Emma does or says now. She seems lost to all sense of decency. I can quite believe that she would tell your mother that you would not have her over here, but I don't think, in fact, I am sure you would not say that, love, for I hope we shall have both your mother and mine over to see us, and I think, if you wish it, you will be only too pleased to acquiesce. But I am determined that your Emma shall not come over here, at least not to us, so that if you have told her so beforehand, so much the better. I cannot help thinking, love, that the old saying about men being deceitful, etc., ought to be altered in favour of women, for I was months and months and was constantly seeing your Emma, and still had no idea of anything of the kind. I think you must allow, love, that your sex excel in being superficially nice, when all beneath is raging volcana and badness. I have also thought several times, darling, that your Emma is an awful example of training. I think we ought to profit by it, wifey, for it would be a sad thing if we made the same mistake with ours and were served in the same manner. I shall be pleased to receive the box next Tuesday. I suppose there will be some more dancing on the Monday without me. I seem to have quite dropped out of all your amusements. I think the Marstons have taken a number of rooms in the same house, as there have been 11 of them altogether, brothers-in-law, sisters, etc. I wish our wedding was to be next week, love, instead of so many weeks to come. It seems a long time to wait, and still it will soon pass. We were working until 1:30 this morning, so you may guess that I don't feel very brisk today. I promised Mr. Cooper we would have the wages appropriated for the next board meeting next Thursday, and notwithstanding the overtime this week, I don't think we shall get done, and I don't feel disposed to work on the Sunday. You did not say whether you saw Fred or Annie Johnson at Cleethorpes, love, did you? I have not time for more, love, except that I love you more than ever, and will always remain your loving, true, and faithful husband, Fred. P.S. I think I'm going to Yarm tomorrow, or Ayton, or else Redcar. I feel that a little change will do me good. I have to confess I'm not happy with Fred, using Emma's behaviour to justify an atrocious bit of misogyny regarding the deceitfulness of women. Mind you, I wasn't happy with Janie's judgment of the older women and their legs at the beach, and I guess I just have to remind myself that neither of them are going to be paragons of virtue. They are people of their time. I don't know how to reconcile with it at the moment, but I don't want you to think that I didn't think it worthy of note. Actually, taking the theme of misogyny into the wider world, the day Fred wrote this last letter, the 18th of August 1882, was rather an auspicious day, as it was the day on which the Married Women's Property Act of 1882 was passed. Before this date, legally, anything a woman owned, be it income, property, or the clothes on her back, upon marriage, was no longer hers. It belonged entirely to her husband. In June Purvis's book, A History of Women's Education in England, she relates the story of Millicent Garrett Fawcett, who in 1877 gave evidence in court regarding the theft of her purse at Waterloo Station. She read on the charge sheet that the thief was charged with stealing from the person of Millicent Fawcett a purse containing £1, 18 shillings and sixpence, the property of Henry Fawcett. Full of indignation, Millicent felt that she had been charged with theft herself of her own belongings. Interestingly, after this, she emerged in the 1880s as one of the leaders of the women's suffrage movement. It's truly horrifying to really understand at that time that as a woman, once you were married, you became a legal non-entity with no control of the coins in your hand and no rights to the roof over your head. You were not even allowed to write your own will. And while you couldn't be sued, neither could you sue. It was all in the hands of your husband. You'd better hope and pray he was a kind and reasonable man, because as far as the law of England was concerned, you had absolutely no legal status. The campaign to change the law so that husbands and wives would be recognised as two separate legal entities had begun years before, spearheaded by the educational activist and feminist Barbara Bodichon. In 1854, she published a far-reaching work called The Brief Summary in Plain Language of the Most Important Laws Concerning Women, in which she described women as having no status of their own, and her writings proved to be crucial to the campaign and the passing of the Act. In the months that followed the change of the law, there were one or two newspaper articles that expressed concerns that it would create a domestic revolution, but by and large, the majority of the reports were supportive, seeing the Act as an undoing of a great wrong and offering vital protection for women against potentially unscrupulous husbands. Of course, the Act came too late for Fred's mother, Anne, who was still at this point paying rent to her grandson, to remain in the home she hadn't been able to inherit from her late husband. Rent that Fred was still helping to supplement. Thankfully, Anne had a loving family who rallied around her, but it's so sad to think that she was so entirely dependent on that kindness. When I think about Anne's story, and of course Emma's story, it really hits home to me that being born a woman at that time was to be born into a state of unspeakable vulnerability. The very idea of it, it's terrifying. Anyway, we'll leave it there for now. Next time, we discover that Janie had been ice skating, yes, in the summer. Get ready for another research rabbit hole. And an almighty row blows up at the Cross Keys. I'll give you one whole guess as to who was the cause of it. Thank you so much for listening to my love letter time machine. I'd very much like to share Fred and Janie's story with more people. So if you haven't already, can I ask you to leave a review on your podcast app if there is space to do so? It really helps more people find Fred and Janie's story. You can also find excerpts of Fred and Janie's letters on Instagram at My Love Letter Time Machine, or one word. And you can write to me at myloveletterTimeMachine@gmail.com. Until next time, take care.